Ready? The Slurry Storm Podcast with Andy Lamb and Emily Nemeth.
It's Andy here, and thank you for being there as we try something a little bit different, but hugely important. COVID, as we know, has hit lots of people around the world in lots of different ways. And today we're going to bring you the story of Charles Ainsworth. The name might sound familiar to Three Storm fans, as his daughter Kat was part of that two-time back-to-back title winning side. And after him and his wife Julie were over in the UK at the end of January to visit the brand new grandson, they returned home to Australia, where things took a turn for the worst.
We'd been in England visiting our daughter, had her first son, and then we had to get out of England because they were closing the airport at Singapore. So they had to rush out to Heathrow, which I went out with my son-in-law, and rearranged the flights, and it was a bit hectic out there. And Julie came out later, and we actually got on the flight that night, which was Sunday night. Got to Singapore the next day because Singapore was closing Monday night. And Singapore, in my opinion, was pretty well up to date with what was going on because they had the mask and taking temperatures, and Heathrow was just... So they asked you to go back 5 days. My 5 days would have been Heathrow Airport that Sunday when I was pushing shoulders trying to get back on a flight. But otherwise, we arrived back on the Wednesday, made our way back to the casino, tickled my throat on the Friday and said to my family, suggested I come over to the fever clinic and get tested. My wife come with me, did the test, and they said they'd let us know on Monday what was going. I got the message that I was positive. Julie got no message at all. That went right on to... Virtually started as soon as they diagnosed me. I was getting phone calls from the fever clinic wanting my pulse rate and temperatures and whatever, and also one from Mid-North Coast doing exactly the same, the health department. And that went on to the following Friday. I come back over here, went down to the fever clinic, and they checked me out because I was starting to, temperature was going all over the place and a little bit of diarrhoea. And then on the Monday, Dr. Brian Hughes contacted my wife and said he was coming over home. And I said to my wife, that can't be right. Doctors don't make home calls. And he arrived over at 5:30. By 7:30, I was in the hospital here. And I still didn't feel that I was sick. But I had said to him, how did you diagnose that? And he said, you had the symptoms. And that was how he... picking it up, but he wasn't going to hesitate. He just bang, called the ambulance. They were there in about 5 minutes. Over here about 7 o'clock, and that's virtually after that, I'm led to believe I started going downhill.
You don't remember?
Don't remember. Can't even remember going into the room. And then there I had the 14 days in the ICU, 11 days on the ventilator. And waking up really still thinking, well, what's going on? Because I don't remember being sick, but everybody telling me I was a very lucky man. And of course, I can't thank them enough in ICU, because whatever they were doing, it was working. And then it took me about 4 days to get all the wires off me. Everybody thought I was well enough to send downstairs or upstairs, wherever it was, which I thought I was going to a general ward, but when I got down, it was isolation, so it started over again. So,
was it hard in isolation, not being able to, you know, hug loved ones or be close to loved ones?
Yeah, my wife only got to the door again, and of course, be it the doctors or nurses. Nurses are only virtually bringing meals initially, but washing and that type of thing. First few days, and then after that, built up enough strength to do my own showering and whatever. But yeah, it was, and of course they were in the full protective gear, and all you're doing is looking at eyes, and some days they're putting the name up on the board who they were, and of course you weren't quite sure of their voices.
It would have felt very surreal, all of that.
That was, yeah, that was very much awakening for me. And then sort of hit me then that, you know, what's happening to my family? I'm here, where's my family? And then as Julie was coming over every day sort of visiting me. And
what was going through your head when you knew you had this virus and you'd seen what had been happening to other people around the world with this virus?
I still don't understand it. I honestly don't understand. You know, some people were getting treated at home. But now, you know, I've been through a system. I've had ICU, I've had isolation, and I've had hospital and home. You know, complete service that I, you know. What other people get, I presume it's just hospital and home. I don't know.
And how does it feel walking through the doors today, being back here, obviously in a much better state, cracking jokes and looking very sprightly?
Yeah, it's... I've got some good fond memories I'll never forget from here. Coming in here, last time I went out, I was on a stretcher, and I said, it's coming back in again, and sort of looking around the room, it's, you know, thank heavens they're here. Thank heavens. Yeah.
Well, Julie Ainsworth is Warren's wife of nearly 50 years.
So it was a bit daunting, but one day there we thought they rang to say that it was touch and go, that he... So I don't know what they did that night, but it brought him round, and he's then slowly come back to us. Yeah, so it was unbelievable. And then he went down to E10 for isolation, and then they led him home, and he tested 2 negatives. And then I asked to be tested again, and I was negative again. And I just cannot speak so highly of the hospital and the staff and everyone involved. It was just absolutely amazing. There's no words that can, you know, thank you is just not enough. Yeah.
What was going through your head when he first got the diagnosis of COVID? Having seen, I guess, what was happening around the world? And
well, we, you know, the first time he got it, there wasn't a lot happening. And then, I just thought, well, I was waiting for my test to come back. And it didn't come back for a few days later, and I think they said they mainly concentrated on the positive ones, and then mine come back negative, and it was just hard to believe. And then when he did go downhill, that was very daunting. We just prayed every day, that, and the family, we, you know, all kept in touch, and I couldn't see him then when he was here. In the ICU for 14 days because I had to isolate again. So,
how difficult was that, not being able to be with your loved one?
Very difficult, very difficult, very difficult. But my son would come and talk to me over the fence, and you know, it was very hard because I'm not used to being on my own, and I was on my own for the 2 weeks. But it was, yeah,
half a century together.
Yes, in October, yeah, it'd be 50 years. So, we've done well, ups and downs, but he's here.
Were you surprised by how severe the virus got?
Yes, because for the first week he was okay, and then he started to get the fevers at the weekend, and then the diarrhoea. So and it was really daunting trying to look after him at home, and at the actually everyone, the health department and the nurses were ringing twice a day, and I would be telling them his temperature and everything, and yeah, so it was a bit hard to have that responsibility to do that, but yeah.
And how does it feel for you today, walking through these doors with Warren cracking jokes and looking very sprightly?
It's just brilliant, and to see everyone involved is just, you know, just brilliant. It's, he's, you know, got his life back, and family, just, it's wonderful.
Julie Ainsworth. Well, Dr. Rachel Heap is the intensive care specialist who treated Warren.
I think one of the things that we were very aware of was that Mr. Ainsworth was in a high risk group. Now, that meant that there was a significant chance of him losing his life through this virus. What we had done was a lot of prepping, a lot of planning, a lot of training, a lot of learning beforehand, so that we had some very strict protocols in place and some very strict planning. So we knew the trigger to put somebody on a life support machine. And when Mr. Ainsworth hit that trigger, all of the prepping and all of the training and all the planning, it kicked into motion. So actually the amount of thinking that we had to do about that, that came down to training and how we'd planned for it. Obviously we were extremely worried for him because we knew from outcomes from overseas that he had a very significant chance of not surviving this illness. So trying to give him the opportunity to talk to his wife before we gave him an anaesthetic, for her to say goodbye if that's what she needed to do. So we did everything we could to give them that opportunity, but at the same time, time was critical and we had to get moving to do what we had to do for Mr. Ainsworth.
That's amazing. So he was in such a high-risk category that he did have to say goodbye to his wife at one point.
Yes, we realised that he was deteriorating. We realised that we had a very narrow window of opportunity whilst he was still conscious and able to talk, and there was every chance that that may have been the last time.
Can you tell me a bit about how, I guess, the illness went while he was here? Because I think he said he was under for 11 days, was it?
Mr. Ainsworth was critically unwell. He needed to be on a ventilator for almost 2 weeks. He had issues with very high temperature. He had a myriad of problems, as we know, are associated with COVID. But what we know in intensive care is how to support people through critical illness. And the basics of that medicine are the same for all patients. What we do is we strive to keep people alive whilst their body is given a chance to heal, and that's what we did for Mr. Ainsworth.
And you did an incredible job because he's been able to walk through that door today and crack some jokes. How has it felt for you seeing him and Julian here today, happy, again, quite sprightly and getting ready to celebrate their 50-year anniversary?
It's extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. I don't think I didn't expect to see him again, and I certainly didn't expect to see him looking as well as he does so soon after getting out of a fairly long stay in the intensive care unit. And the fact that he and his wife are able to celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary, and that we know that that's going to be able to happen, is a gift for us because it makes what we do worth it. People have talked about us being the front line in this battle against COVID. Well, I would respectfully disagree with that. I would say that the community, they're the front line. And the fact that in Australia we maintained our social distancing, people stayed home when they were asked to, that meant that us as the rear guard, we haven't so far had to look after too many patients with COVID. So I would just thank the community for protecting everybody and particularly protecting us. We're here, we're ready, we're trained to do the job, but we prefer not to have to.
Dr. Rachel Heap from Intensive Care at the Base Hospital. It's news time.
Quite incredible story, I'm sure you'll agree, and thanks to Kat and the rest of the family for their permission and letting us use that.
Ready? The Story Storm podcast with Andy Lamb and Emily Nemeth.